Not only are the Blue Jays not going to trade Vlad Guerrero Jr., they might sign Pete Alonso? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, January 17th, your MLB recap covering news, notes, updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. Make sure you send your friends firstpitchpodcast.com to get the latest episodes. And there's a lot for no actual free agents having signed on Thursday, Troy. There's a lot to talk about today. I want to get into this whole Mets, Blue Jays, Vlad, Pete Alonso thing. But first, real quick, let's get it out of the way. The Chicago Cubs have continued their really weird trend of just not going to arbitration hearings. They've had four in the last 35 off seasons, right? Ian Happ won his in 2021. Before that, you have to go back to like Bruce Sutter in 1980 for a dude that won his arbitration hearing. They've only had four. They're not going to have one with Kyle Tucker, right? We talked about this when it happened that they could not reach a deal with Kyle Tucker. The Cubs filed at $15 million. He filed at $17.5 million. They have settled at $16.5 million. So today is Kyle Tucker's birthday. He is on his way to Cubs convention, which starts today, I think, or Saturday morning, on the north side of Chicago. And he has a contract for 2025. Do you have any faith that this, them giving up $1.5 million versus him giving up $1 million, means that they're going to do what they have to do to sign him to an extension? Or is this just, it's another Juan Soto with the Yankees? They'll have 1 year of Kyle Tucker, and then he'll be next year's premier free agent.
I am not going to be surprised at all if Kyle Tucker only spends 1 year with the Chicago Cubs, just from the track record that we have seen from that franchise throughout the years. But I have also seen the recent reports that the Cubs were very regretful of not tendering Kyle Schwarber a contract in 2020. Mm-hmm. And so they may be looking at Kyle Tucker and saying, you know what, we kind of messed up when we didn't tender Kyle Schwarber a contract. Now he's one of the best power hitters in the sport.
We learned our lesson on the slugging Kyle. Don't let the other slugging Kyle leave.
Right, exactly. And but yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy that record that they've got going on, 35 off seasons and only having four arbitration hearings. That's almost one every nine seasons. That's insane. But I know he's listening, so shout out to Kyle Tucker. Happy birthday, bud.
Happy birthday, pal. Appreciate
the follow.
We're happy for you. We're glad you're here. You're welcome to come on if you ever want to come on and talk about the show. Again, I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. Troy's at Troy B Baseball. So you're welcome to come on. I want to move on real quick. We had to cover that because we made fun of the Cubs when they didn't sign him to a deal at the arbitration deadline. We got to move on to this Mets-Blue Jays thing, because the other day we talked about how the Mets had checked in on Vlad Guerrero Jr. And we talked about, is this a negotiating tactic with Pete, or are they genuinely moving on? And we saw a report on Thursday that the Mets now have reached the conclusion, the idea, whatever, that they are not going to get Pete Alonso back. He is more than likely going to go somewhere else. The same time, I think you told me there was a report about Pete declining a contract offer from the Mets at the same time.
Yeah. Yep. He and Scott Boras came to the Mets with a 3-year deal with either one or multiple opt-outs and a very high average annual salary. And the Mets countered with a 3-year deal that's in the $68 to $70 million range. And Pete said, no, thank you.
What a wild situation, right? To kind of recap some of this here, Pete, in June 2023, he turned down a 7-year, $158 million offer. Pete did, from the Mets. Now, that would have bought out his final year of arbitration, which came out to $20.5 million. So the new money there was 6 years and $137.5 million. You and I, a couple weeks ago, talked about this. I didn't really see a lot of teams that would be interested or had the space to sign Pete Alonso. I made the joke, I think, on Twitter, the Sacramento A's are going to, can a polar bear survive in the desert? Right. That's going to be a thing. But we did get a report that the Toronto Blue Jays are legitimately interested in Pete Alonso. And then they also have a deal out for Alex Bregman as well. Is this something where, like, there's a couple different ways this could work out, right? If you just get Bregman, he's at third and Vlad's at first. If they get Pete, they would move Vlad Guerrero to third base, which seems kind of odd. He started off as a third baseman. He played 12 games there last year. He, back in September, he actually told one of the writers with Sportsnet that he, quote, would love to play third base, calling it his position. So if, let's hypothetical, let's say that Pete Alonso does sign with the Toronto Blue Jays, okay? Is this enough for the Blue Jays to be competitive in the AL East, which I would argue is not the hardest division? I don't think that's the AL East, but one of the hardest divisions in baseball. Like, is Pete Alonso in that lineup enough, or is they still have to do more to be competitive?
Oh, no, I don't think that's enough at all. I think they still have a lot to do to be competitive, because if even if they do add Pete Alonso and they don't add Alex Bregman, their three best hitters are Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, if he's healthy and if he's on, and Pete Alonso, who is the antithesis one-trick pony to Luis Arraez, where Pete Alonso's only trick is hitting home runs. And so, and they do still have George Springer, who's a really good hitter, but he's getting up there in age. You can't really expect him to do much anymore.
Upper 30s, yeah.
Yeah. So it's nowhere near enough. They waited way too long in the offseason to really make any meaningful moves. I mean, I still think they're probably going to finish fourth in the division, even if they do sign Pete Alonso.
Yeah. And this is something, you know, they've been a finalist for what feels like everybody, but they haven't landed it. They've been the bridesmaid for just about, not even the maid of honor, just the bridesmaid for like every single premier free agent in the last few seasons. Let's hypothetical this here. If the Blue Jays managed, let's say they bring in Alonso and Bregman. I don't know. I mean, who knows, right? Let's say that they do both of those. Do you feel like that is a positive omen for them being able to sign either Vlad or Bo Bichette? Or is that something where your two big keystones of the lineup in Vlad and Bichette will just become your two keystones in Bregman and Alonso after this season?
Yeah, I think it would be more of the second one, because again, at this point in the offseason, with the way that Pete Alonso and Alex Bregman's free agency stints have gone this year, there's not really many teams out there that want to sign them. If anybody wanted to sign them, they would have been signed by now, and because they would have come to an agreement on something. And both of these guys are really overvaluing what they're worth, and no team wants to come up to that value because the teams understand y'all ain't worth that. And so really, with Pete Alonso and Alex Bregman, if they do go to the Toronto Blue Jays, it's like a last ditch effort. Otherwise, they're going to have to be brushing up on their Japanese.
I still think Sacramento could definitely take Pete on, and just, you know, the A's could just let him mash in that minor league ballpark for a couple seasons, you know, give him the deal with the opt out and kind of go with that. This is really interesting. Like, we talked about Vlad being traded and what would he be traded for. There was some reporting in some of those same stories about the package that the Blue Jays have indicated to teams that they would need for Vlad is a team greater, or as a package greater than the deal the Padres got for Juan Soto, which I'll remind you here, that was Michael King, Drew Thorpe, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, four pitchers, and catcher Kyle Higashioka for Soto and outfielder Trent Grisham. If you had to pick acquiring Juan Soto with 1 year or acquiring Vlad Guerrero Jr. with 1 year, who would you rather give up that package to get?
Oh, Juan Soto, easily. I honestly, for me, the two best hitters in baseball to me are Juan Soto and Yordan Alvarez. So if it's anybody but Yordan Alvarez on the other side, I'm always going to pick Juan Soto, regardless of what the package is, just because of how high I am on his ability to take walks, plus hit home runs, plus hit doubles, plus he doesn't field, he doesn't run well, but he hits well, and that's what I'm enjoy watching him do.
I'd have probably said Shohei Ohtani as my second, but that's cool. That's fine. yeah, this is a really interesting situation here. Like, I don't really know where, like, how this all shakes down, right? We've talked about, obviously, you know, the Blue Jays need to find somebody. The Mets are kind of in this stalemate now. I did see an interesting note that Nolan Arenado is open to more teams using his no trade clause, or not using his no trade clause to block a deal, than he was back in December when he blocked a deal to the Astros. We kind of talked on this show, I think you and I did. The Astros were by far the best destination for him. But if you had the option, would you rather 3 years of Nolan Arenado via trade or 3 years of Alex Bregman in a free agent deal? Which would you rather have?
I think I would rather have Nolan Arenado, even though he had the down year in 2024. I still think he is a better defender than Alex Bregman. And Alex Bregman's a good defender. I mean, he just won a gold glove. But I still think Nolan Arenado is the better defender. And in the long run, I still also think that Nolan Arenado is the better hitter than Alex Bregman, even though I think Nolan Arenado is older than Alex Bregman. I would still take Nolan Arenado over Alex Bregman.
Yeah, it feels like the floor for Arenado is higher because of the defense, right? Bregman, like you said, won a gold glove. You can kind of question whether or not he deserved the gold glove or not at third base. But if I remember right, his arm strength's not great. It's a situation where, like, I'm probably – people are going to say, well, Arenado's going to cost you prospects. It won't cost you that much. And Bregman has a qualifying offer, so that would cost you draft picks. I mean, it's – would you rather give up prospects or draft picks? I also think the Blue Jays are potentially in a situation, depending on if they get Sasaki, where they could give some international pool space in the deal as well. Not that the Cardinals would want that, but just a really interesting kind of situation here with all of that. I don't know what's the best outcome for the Blue Jays, or if there even is one that's good enough for them to be competitive at this point in the offseason, right? Where you look at, the only real impact starter available is Jack Flaherty. You do have Roky Sasaki. We all expect him to go to the Dodgers. I don't think that's really an option for the Blue Jays. It was nice that they put him in there just to kind of, you know, I don't know, continue the bridesmaid theme. But, like, outside of, like, Jack Flaherty is the only real impact starter. Hitters, Pete Alonso, some people see him as an impact hitter. You got Anthony Santander, another qualifying offer player. It feels like there's not much that they could do this offseason to propel themselves up in the East, in the American League East, unless they wanted to bring on multiple qualifying offer players at this point. There's just not the impact left on the market. Because to your point, you said earlier, they just waited too long to really do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly think that even if they did bring on multiple of those qualifying offer players, they'd still probably finish fourth in the American League East, just because the Yankees are so tough, and the Baltimore Orioles, even though they really haven't done much, they still kind of added to their pitching depth, and they're still kind of maybe working to add to that pitching depth. But they did add Charlie Morton to the middle / back end of their rotation, and he's going to be a good piece there and a nice veteran for the, I say, younger guys in the rotation, but most of them are pushing 30 to learn off of.
And Grayson Rodriguez will learn some stuff there. He'll learn some stuff.
Yeah. I think he's the youngest one in that rotation. But right now that Zach Eflin is leading, but I just the Blue Jays, they have so many holes in their roster, and there's not enough impact talent to fill all the holes that they need to fill in order to be real legit contenders.
Moving to the Mets side of this, it's really interesting kind of how they're approaching this after the report of, you know, they've kind of concluded that Pete's going to go elsewhere. They pulled a situation similar to what the Yankees did, where the Yankees didn't get Soto, and they go out, they trade for Devin Williams, they sign Max Fried, they do a couple different guys. This is a situation where the Mets have already, they brought in Jesse Winker, they re-signed him, 1 year, $8 million. That was official on Thursday, or I guess announced on Thursday. I don't think it's official yet, but announced on Thursday, bringing him back to add to their outfield mix. And they're reportedly heavy into the relief market. Do you think if you don't bring back Pete Alonso and you end up having to move first base is now Mark Vientos and third base is some combination of Brett Beatty or somebody else, but you're able to add Jesse Winker to your outfield and DH mix, and you're able to say, let's say you sign Tanner Scott, the best reliever out there. Is that version of the New York Mets, yes, add Juan Soto, take out Pete Alonso, is that a better version of the team than what you had last year when you had Pete in there and the team went to the NLCS?
I think it's a better version. I think I still don't think that it was a team that normally would have made the NLCS. I think they kind of benefited from the playoffs being a crapshoot.
They kind of overachieved a bit, maybe.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I still think that adding Tanner Scott would be a fantastic addition because they definitely need to add more pieces to that bullpen for it to be more of a strength to kind of counteract the lack of strength that their rotation is under the hood, some might say. But it's adding Tanner Scott would go a long way. I still think that they're going to finish third in the National League East, yeah. but I do think they are a better team going into 2025 than they were in 2024.
Looking at that bullpen right now, Edwin Diaz obviously locked in as the closer. You would not demote him for Tanner Scott. Outside of that, Jose Buttow and Reed Garrett are probably your setup men. And then after that, it's like Danny Young, the only lefty you have back there right now. Daniel Nunez, Sean Reed Foley, not a lot of super inspiring names. So adding Tanner Scott, one, gives you another fantastic lefty. Now you have two lefties and Danny Young and him, and then gives you a quality, not only a quality back end guy, but somebody who, if Diaz has to miss time, struggles, whatever, we've seen him have injuries before. Tanner Scott does absolutely give you another fallback. Do you think it's possible? Like Pete was only making 20 million, 20 and a half million last year. The deal they offered him was probably more than that, right? Do you think it's possible that you were like Winker's 8 million, that they add Tanner Scott and try to find another starter? Or do you think that these six guys they have, Sean Manaea, Kodai Senga, Frankie Montas, David Peterson, Clay Holmes, Paul Blackburn, are they probably happy going into the season with those six, knowing that like Griffin Koenig came in on a deal? They've got guys like Tyler Megill and Brandon Sproat and Blake Tidwell they can call up if they need to. You think they try to go out and get another, a Jack Flaherty on a short-term deal, a Nick Pivetta with a qualifying offer, or do they just kind of stick with the reliever and Jesse Winker and go into the season?
I think they would like to add another starter. I don't think that, especially if they add Tanner Scott, I don't think it would be very realistic, even though Steve Cohen's like, spend all the money. I've got more money than Jesus.
I have
spend
more. Yeah.
But I don't think that would be very realistic. So I think that the rotation they have now is going to be the one that they enter 2025 with. And another thing, if they do add Tanner Scott, we've seen that Carlos Estrada kind of likes to play the analytics with the bullpen and bring in Edwin Diaz in a non-save situation in the highest leverage spot where, in my opinion, you should bring in your closer. I really like Carlos Estrada as a manager. And so if they bring in Edwin Diaz in the eighth inning, in a high leverage situation in the eighth inning, they could bring in Tanner Scott in the ninth to close out the game. So adding Tanner Scott to the back end of that bullpen would be a big help for them. But no, I don't think they're going to add another starter this offseason.
I do think a big part of the Mets' success in 25, outside of the rotation, like you've touched on, the biggest issue with that team is the rotation, right?
Yeah.
I do think a big part of it is which of these young players kind of steps up. Like Francisco Alvarez has to figure it out, right? You know, he was good his first year. He struggled last year. But you have a trio of promising infield prospects. Ronnie Mauricio, he's played second. He's played third. He's played short. You have Jet Williams, who was a shortstop, second baseman, center fielder. You have Luis Angel Acuna, who is a second baseman, shortstop, third baseman. He's played a little bit of outfield, too. I'm pretty sure he has in the minors. And so Brett Beatty, obviously, also the guy at third base. He was a top 30 prospect before he struggled for two straight seasons. I feel like one of those guys getting hot and figuring it out and cementing in the lineup could go a long way towards making them a more complete lineup as they get to the end of some of this time of some of these old guys, right? Starting Marte's 36. You know, he's probably not right now. I'd probably have him on the bench, or, you know, now that they signed Jesse Winker, Marte's probably a bench player for me. But I do think getting those young guys integrated, Jeff McNeil's, what, 32, Brandon Nimmo's 31. Both of them struggled a little bit. We'll see who can get better. McNeil at second base, Nimmo probably in left. But I feel like getting at least one of those young guys going, if not more, is definitely going to be go a long way towards helping them paper over some of the questions in the rotation. But I still ultimately kind of agree with you. I still think it's the third place team because I just don't trust those starters. I mean, Manaea looked great last year. Kodai Senga has shown the talent when he's healthy. But, I mean, do we really trust Frankie Montas to do it? Do we trust Clay Holmes? Do we trust David Peterson? Do we trust Paul Blackburn? Not in a postseason series. Like, you know, I don't think there's any issue with those guys in June, right? But in a postseason series, if they go into Philly in the Citizens Bank Park to face your Phillies, or if they go into a Truist Park to face my Braves, you're going to match up with Wheeler and Nola and Sanchez with Frankie Montas as your third starter. You know, you're going to match up with Sale and Strider and Schwellenbach with David Peterson starting game three. Like, it doesn't make, it doesn't feel like it's enough. And it's weird to think of the Mets as having this much money, this many resources, and that's the rotation going into the season. I know David Stearns has worked wonders with pitchers, but this has got to be the biggest challenge of David Stearns' career, is getting this rotation through a postseason series. You can get to the playoffs with this team, but can you win in the postseason with this as your rotation? I don't know if they can.
No, I completely agree with you. And I do think, even though I've said multiple times that this is a third place team in the National League East, I do still fully expect them to make the playoffs, just because the National League Central, they're only going to have the division winner as their representative. And then the National League West is going to be the Dodgers and one of the Padres and the Diamondbacks. And it's looking more likely like it's going to be the Diamondbacks.
Or the Giants, maybe? They're trying.
Not this year. They're trying.
Probably not this year. They are trying, though. Let's give them credit for trying.
Oh, yeah. They're doing more than they have in a long time, but I don't think it's going to be in 2025. But it's just with Sean Manaea, it's just his surface level numbers were good. They weren't great, but they were good in 2024. But once you look under the hood at the Baseball Savant page, it's a lot more blue than you'd like to see. And then with Kodai Senga, like you said, he has the talent. Win healthy. You have to add the win healthy qualifier. Yeah. Frankie Montas is another guy. He has shown sparks of greatness, but he is inconsistent when he is on the field. And he's another guy, win healthy qualifier. So it's just, it's a pretty weak rotation. They've definitely done a good job with the offense. And like you said, if one of those young guys can step up, they can go a long way to papering over the weakness of the rotation. But I do still think they have to add Tanner Scott to really have two strengths, instead of the offense being a strength, the rotation being a weakness, and then the bullpen being a meh.
Yeah, I do think, just kind of on paper right now, I feel comfortable going to the record right now and saying the Mets are going to have to get a starter at the deadline.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of looking at this rotation right now, one of these six players qualified on ERA leaderboards last year, and that was Sean Manaea. Montas was the next closest at 150 and two-thirds innings. His ERA was also 4.84. Even if you bring that down by a run, that's still a 3.84 is still fringe number four starter, you know, and right now he's their number three. Kodai Senga threw 5 1/3 innings last year. Clay Holmes threw 63, and typically those relievers that have moved to the rotation, they're good. I looked this up the other day for the Braves podcast. They're good on average for about 130 innings.
Yep.
That's pretty much what you get from them the next season, is around 130 innings, right? Paul Blackburn, 75 innings in the majors last year. David Peterson, 120. And And so, like, you're in a situation, all of these guys, except for Peterson, are also over 30 already. They're all 31, 32, 33. So they're not getting younger. They're, you know, they're on the back half of their absolute prime years. It just feels kind of tenuous to me. And I'm a little bit nervous about the ability of the Mets to make it through a season and then still be effective and good enough to win a postseason series. But I do want to, real quick before we go, I want to get your thoughts. This sucks whenever this happens. And we lost another one of the game's greats in Milwaukee announcer Bob Uecker. And a lot of people know him, obviously, radio voice of the Brewers. He did TV. He's done WrestleMania. He's done World Series. But he also is one of the most frequent guests on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, right? He did movies, Major League. I think the first time I ever saw him as a kid was on the movie Major League, where he was phenomenal. 90 years old. We found out after he passed that he has been fighting small cell lung cancer since 2023. And yet he did almost a full home slate at the age of 90 while fighting cancer. It's very early to do this, obviously. We're going to be a little bit biased on this. But in the Mount Rushmore of baseball announcers, he's on there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Just a bit outside alone. Bob Uecker's got to be on there. He's because he loved the sport of baseball. And I mean, that's evident just from him being 90 and fighting cancer and still calling almost a full home slate of Brewers games. He called Brewers games for multiple decades. He had to sit through Milwaukee Brewers games when they were not good. And that's just how much he loved baseball and loved the Brewers. And so, yeah, he's definitely got to be up there. Just and he brought humor. He brought a lot of humor to the game. He's one of the funniest people ever to be a celebrity in any form or fashion. And so it sucks that he's gone, but you know, he's not hurting anymore. And so yeah. So he's going to be missed.
One of my favorite things, like I called like a week worth of minor league games. It's not an easy job to do, right? But one of my favorite types of games to flip over and catch Bob Uecker doing was that game that's like 9-1 in the third inning, because he was the announcer more so than anybody else in baseball who could make you still want to tune in on a game like that because of the stories and the anecdotes. I mean, he played with greats. He was signed by the Milwaukee Braves when he first started. He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame as an announcer. He won the John Frick Award, but he played with greats. He played with Hank Aaron. He's been around the game for so long that just about anybody prominent that's come through baseball in the last 60, 70 years, they knew Bob Uecker, and he has a story about them. And that was always the best part, I felt like, of if you, to kind of make the joke, if you were stuck watching a Brewers game, you knew that it was going to be enjoyable no matter what, if it was a blowout or a close game or whatever. He was a good broadcaster. He was a good storyteller, and he was a better person. And I think that's something that we don't get a lot of anymore, because he was so unique in a way that nobody else in baseball really is, right? Vin Scully is kind of the gold standard for everybody for broadcasting. And Bob Uecker's on that same tier, but in a completely different way. And nobody's ever going to be Bob Uecker again. And I just think it's the game's a little bit less unique and special because of that. And that's just what kind of sucks about 2025 and the way that we're starting the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there is any bright side that anybody can take away from this, it's that the Milwaukee Brewers were the National League Central champions the last 2 years. So he did get to see the Brewers at least win the division his last two seasons that he called their home games. So at least he did get to see that.
Would have been nice to see him get to call a World Series or something, but you know, it doesn't always work out. This has been First Pitch for Friday, January 17th. You're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a five-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Tell all your friends. Go to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can find out everything that's happening in Major League Baseball every single day. We'll be back on Monday. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.